advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
I have to say, I'm dying inside a little bit on how eccentric you are, Brent.
I'm getting. I posted a post about this. It's a slippery slope to insanity.
You're
I feel it happening, man.
People, okay, listeners out there, like, you think I'm fucked up? Like, you have to meet this guy.
I'm slowly becoming like Sheldon,
man,
or something. Over
you,
here.
Yeah, you got issues.
No, he's. I laugh.
We're laughing. Me and Dave are eyeballing each other.
Every single episode, Brad and I are side eyeballing each other.
I see it. Laughing. I know you guys are amused by my behavior.
Oh, I'm not trying to hide.
Dave's laughing. I'm shaking my head like, holy fuck.
I'm not unaware.
Like, what is going on? Like, this
he has his pre-show ritual.
I'm a prisoner to it. There's nothing I can do. I'm just along for the ride.
It started as the pre-show ritual, and now it's like it's going into every facet of your life. Like, it's becoming this.
Other than the whiskey, what else?
You're having to have notes and like you're like just like making everything perfect, you know, like certain things. Like
my cell phone goes right here. My notes go right there. I have to drink whiskey when it's please read from sheets. And Dave moved the whiskey into the wrong place. I had to go get the
There's
whiskey.
A whiskey bottle 6 inches from your hand.
I already drank that whiskey on another episode. I had to get this one because we were going to give Chris Truitt because I missed his birthday party on accident. We got the Chris Truitt Redemption is what we're doing right now. And I wanted to drink the same one you were drinking.
Okay.
It was just a want. It wasn't even a need. It was just like a preference, right?
I disagree.
Whatever. Say whatever you need to say, Brent.
This is, yeah.
Man.
I mean, yeah. I'm actually currently looking for places for help online for you right now. So we have a few shout outs. Some Instagram people on mine. Brent shouted his out on Tuesday. Just kind of a weekly event. So Fun Junkie Adventure on Instagram. Thank you for listening to the show. Matt Santo, BJJ, both me and you talked to him too, right, Brandon?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so thank you. 209 Flower Child 75, been going back and forth with her on about the A's and the White Sox. And of course, the A's are named the A's because they suck ass. So that's that. WW Jason, thank you. The Ectoplasm Show, another podcast. Check them out. They kind of have an eerie tune in the background the whole time. Like it's about what is it? What did you do? What's the ghost hunters type thing, you know, about weird shit like that? The what do they call that? Paranormal
American Ghost Hunter Society.
Is that what it was? The paranormal type stuff.
Yeah.
It is different. You know, I listened to it and kind of they had like some music, eerie music going on.
Oddly enough, I remember when we first started the podcast, we had one or two people who said your podcast should have music in the background the whole time.
And people like that. Yeah, people like that, I guess.
And I've heard some podcasts that do that. It's like in the background, there's like music the whole time.
That's Ectoplasm Show. Like the one I heard, they had music. Like it was like this eerie music in the background. So pretty cool. Check them out.
Well, our plan is to have music. We're just waiting until we've all sung enough on the show to stream an hour long song of just us singing.
Yeah, so far we got like some old school and then some George Strait.
Yeah, we got some Charles and Char. And we got some little Bubbly Water. We got stuff.
And then on Twitter, I just have a fuck you to send out to Dave Passerbyer. Or Dude Passerbyer. Why did I say Dave Passerbyer?
Because you really wanted to say a fuck out to me.
Yeah.
You just wanted to
slip.
So thank you, Dude Passerbyer, for your comments on Twitter. Funny, gave me a laugh. And the other guys liked it because you were making fun of me. So if you're on Twitter, check out our page at Sofa King Podcast. And is it called a page on Twitter? Our feed, I guess?
Whatever.
I don't know.
Give a shit.
And who gives a shit? That's why I say Twitter sucks. That's why Dude Passerbyer's on it. So fuck you.
No, I did. I had a quick shout out and a little bit of a lengthier one. I did this on Tuesday's episode, but I want to do it again. First off, I want to thank Andrew Koth, who's in the Los Angeles area, and he gave me a shout out on Facebook. He started listening to the show. He listens to podcasts at work, and he said that in short order, he's been listening to most of the catalog, and he loves what we do. So shout out to Andrew Koth. I know he's in a band called the Invisible Astro Healing Rhythm Quartet, which is supposed to be like legit.
What?
Like a really cool
Astro Healing.
The Invisible Astro Healing Rhythm Quartet.
That's a fucking name. No, Angeles.
They play here in town, but they also play in LA.
I picture that's ambient noise band or something.
Local jazz guy, Chris Tyner, is involved in it.
They played at the coffee shop yesterday.
Yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Well, shit, I missed him.
Yeah.
I got a shout out yesterday from him and wasn't even there for his show. Mm-hmm. But thanks to Andrew Koth. I know he's involved in other projects as well. And then finally, I do want to give a shout out to a gal named Alexandra Caswell. Alexandra Caswell, just to kind of break it down for a second. She's been diagnosed with breast cancer. She's normally a very private person. She's a really good, genuine, loving human being. She works at the farm animal sanctuary, rescuing injured farm animals who escaped from like factory farms and nursing them to health and so forth. She's got a big heart. She works hard for this organization, for a nonprofit, but she doesn't have shit for health insurance. And she's trying to gather money so that she can afford her treatment and she can come out on top. And she's created a crowdfunding page on a website called youcaring.com. And her name is Alexandra Caswell, Caswell. So please, if you've got a couple of dollars to spare, go to youcaring.com, search for Alexandra Caswell, give her whatever you can, give her a quarter, give her a dollar, give her $20,000. If you're an oncologist, give her free treatment, give her whatever you can give her. Any dollar amount helps. That's what she says over and over again. Like, even if you just give her a couple of bucks, she's
everything helps.
Everything helps. And she needs medical treatment to come out okay. Her goal is to hit $15,000. She's hoping to get more than that because that'll give her a lot of after treatment and so forth. She's already at 10, which is like legit. That's hot shit. So if you're listening, I know you probably don't know her, but if you've got a couple of bucks to spare, instead of getting a latte tomorrow, throw $5 at Alexandra Caswell on youcaring.com and
help save somebody's life.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And get good karma. Just got a message on Instagram from Great Eyed Matt. It was someone I was waiting for a correspondence from. So this guy looks like a Russian assassin.
So yes, I'm laughing at you.
Great Eyed Matt.
Yeah.
Here, I'll show you though. But he said that he likes us because he listened to the podcast and likes us because we're like NPR with cuss words and whiskey.
That's the highest praise I can imagine.
Tell me he doesn't like
Dave does look like a
Dave loves. Oh yeah.
He's like a Russian assassin. You're famous.
We could fight Russian assassin.
It sounds me and him should fight in the basement. Like it'd be a perfect photo op.
I don't know. He looks kind of mean. I don't know if you want to mess with this guy.
Have you seen me?
I saw you, but I know you.
So I look innocent. But I have one more thing too. Sorry, I know you hated the instant shout outs, but I don't get. Squeebs 87, who is none other than Mike Money, right? Shouted us out and Yucateco. So apparently he's
eating some
chips and I don't know what that is. Beans and stuff?
Nachos or something. I saw
with the old hot sauce. So congratulations to him. Dick face.
That's why I'm like instant shout outs because that was just weird.
Why was that weird?
I don't know.
I just want to say congratulations.
You're on Mike Money, chips, and hot sauce.
What's wrong, Mike? You couldn't get your own name on Instagram? What happened?
Yeah, there's probably a lot of Mike Money's out there.
I don't know.
A lot of people who want to be called Mike Money.
Yeah, he does have a legit name.
His name is Mike Money, but there's a million douchebags named Mike who say, yo, I'm Mike Money.
Yeah.
You know,
And Mike Money plays bass. If he was born in the 70s, he would have been just golden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today's topic is a topic that is a listener generated, but we can't point to any individual listener because all of us have heard from multiple people that we can't be a show talking about conspiracy theories and weird happenings without looking at the Bermuda Triangle. So this is our look at the Bermuda Triangle. And again, sorry if you are one of the people who said we should do Bermuda Triangle, sorry we're not shouting you out, but we just shout out enough people and we have a lot of people who want us to do this episode.
We're starting to do like 15 minutes of shout outs every episode now. it's getting crazy.
It's getting a bit much. We'll have to back off on the shout outs. But anyway, so the Bermuda Triangle, as most people know, it is a sort of a fictionally drawn triangle that goes between the tip of Florida, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda. It runs through the Tropic of Cancer. It's right there in the Caribbean or the Caribbean.
I call it the Caribbean.
Yeah, that Caribbean tomato tomato thing gets to me. I'm torn.
Is it Pirates of the Caribbean?
Well, because I say Pirates of the Caribbean,
yeah.
But then when you talk about like going and visiting, it's like the Caribbean.
You're exactly right.
Or like a sauce or something.
I would be like, you're going to the Caribbean, but then you say Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
It might be something like attached to some nostalgia from childhood because of Disneyland. And then when you grew up, you're like, we are going on vacation in the Caribbean. Like, and it's become some like rich destination.
I think it's both. Like you use it in two separate ways.
What does Johnny Depp say? Because that's what matters.
It's Caribbean. He's an idiot, though.
He says Caribbean?
So he says Caribbean.
Why is he an idiot? I guess amazing. Why does my voice get like that when I... I just slur my speech and get high-pitched? Yeah. Is that the whiskey?
The whiskey did it.
That's your love of Johnny Depp.
Apparently, when you put
Johnny Dick's Depp in my mouth?
Johnny Dick's Depp in your mouth. It just goes... Your voice goes high all of a sudden.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. It happens.
I don't know.
It's cute. I don't know what to say.
So the Bermuda Triangle...
When he blows you in gags, does his makeup run on his eyes? I don't know.
That's a...
Wait. Well, he blows me in gags?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's gay, for sure.
All right. I didn't know that was even an option. I've been blowing him for years.
No,
I don't think he is.
Take it.
Anyway, so the term Bermuda Triangle was first termed by a guy named Vincent Gaddis in a magazine called Argosy Magazine. Not anything worthy of study. It's kind of a pulp magazine. But he was looking at a bunch of cases of missing people and so forth in this triangle. He was the one who said we should call it the Bermuda Triangle. Which was kind of arbitrary. We could have called it the Puerto Rico Triangle or the Florida Triangle.
Right.
Because it touches all three.
People have hated Florida for years.
Yeah, exactly. So
is Bermuda. Is it just because Bermuda's north? It's like the top of the triangle.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. That's where the Illuminati eyeball is on the triangle.
Ooh.
I'm sure everyone has heard of the Bermuda Triangle. The idea of the Bermuda Triangle is that weird happenings occur in this region of the ocean, and ships disappear, planes go down, supposedly at an abnormal rate, et cetera, et cetera. So what are your thoughts pre-research, like going into Bermuda Triangle? What are you guys?
I mean, for years since the 80s, unexplained mysteries, and you watch all those documentaries and TV shows, I really feel like there's something special going on in that area of the world for sure.
Okay.
And there's a lot of hype around it. Let's say going into research, there's a lot of debunking that I found going into it. And like maybe exaggeration of information and mistold stories. When you actually go back to the source, some of the stuff starts to fall apart.
People want it to be creepier than it really is.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be way cooler than it was. Like I started researching it and I'm like, this isn't like what I remember it being.
Right. It seems like such a huge
I don't want to kill the show. Like, I really thought it was. It's like when you go to New York and you go to see the Statue of Liberty and you've never seen it before and you realize how small it is.
Right.
And it was kind of like that. Like, I was just kind of like, that's not as cool as I thought it was going to be.
Well, I know. I mean, I tried to research looking at the most legitimate cases of disappearances in the Bermuda Triangle. And there's, to me, the ones like, there's only a handful of really legitimate ones. I mean, they say that like hundreds of ships go missing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, immediately one of the first things I read was that, so this year, 20 ships might get reported missing in the Bermuda Triangle. But no one then follows up that instead of them landing at St. Croix, which was their destination, they had engine problems and they landed at St. Croix, which was like 30 miles away.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there's all these quote unquote missing ships because they filed the fact that the ship was supposed to land at noon on the 13th.
Yeah.
They didn't, but they don't file the fact. I mean, it's the freaking Caribbean. Yeah. There's a million islands packed in there and they just landed someplace else.
Yeah. They didn't really get lost. They were just.
Right. They're just somewhere else, you know.
Well, one of the interesting things that I thought was really awesome was the numbers because. That triangle, that area, that's where all the hurricanes happen to hit Florida, you know, Hurricane Andrew, the ones that just bash on the islands right there. But one of the interesting things that I found was that the Coast Guard actually saves like 11,000 lives a year because the weather is so rough and they go out and they save people. Mm-hmm. These ships that are just, you know, broke down or on fire or all these crazy things that happen or they're in storms. the amount of lives that the Coast Guard saves there, it was pretty astounding.
It is astounding, but again, and I had a really hard time. I was doing my damnedest to find like real stats on what is it here compared to other
places.
It's
hard. Like,
it's almost fucking impossible.
Yeah. Everything was different.
And it's like, and every skeptical argument that I read talking smack about the Bermuda Triangle points back to one thing. There was a study done in 1975 that was then cited in an episode of Nova in 1976, and every single skeptic says, look, we have evidence that there are just as many disappearances in the Bermuda Triangle as there is everywhere else, and they all point to this one thing, which maybe that is the case, but if every single skeptic is pointing to one and only one piece, and even that piece doesn't give numbers, it doesn't give statistics, it just says statistically it's the same as it is. So I had a really hard problem with that. It's like people are trying to prove that there's confirmation bias as a logical fallacy, and that we want there to be a Bermuda Triangle, so we think that there is one, so we confirm everything. But then it seemed like the exact opposite is doing the same thing by all putting it all into this one thing. But even with the 11,000 people, it's like I instantly have to wonder how many of those are refugees leaving Cuba in rafts heading to Florida. Like, that's going to instantly be a massive spike compared to anywhere else that the Coast Guard deals with people.
Yeah, but they deal with, like I said, ships on fire, you know, it broke down ships, you know what I mean? People overboard, things like that.
Two of my favorite songs, by the way, Ships on Fire and
People Overboard. Ships. Oh, Broke Down Ships.
Love those.
Yeah.
Are there really songs in any way?
Like that? I don't know.
But the other thing was like in that triangle, in that area of the ocean, there is a kind of a magnetic spike that they said is real. So it can mess with instruments on planes. It can mess with instrumentation on boats.
Right.
It can do things to mechanics.
It's one of two places in the world where the compass has trouble because it actually points like
true north
instead of magnetic north.
Instead of magnetic north. Yeah. So it points to, and that was the issue. So you can see where planes would, you know, their instrumentation would mess up because the compass is wrong.
Right.
And
especially in the past, like now we've accounted for, we have GPS and
that's
stuff.
I mean, I think that's a big, I mean, that might very well point to a lot of things because the Bermuda Triangle at its height of fame and mystery and so forth, we're talking really the 1970s, early 1980s.
Yeah, it's gone down since.
And it's gone down radically because I don't think shit disappears as much. And A, social media, everybody's watching everything. But B, I think that's roughly about the time we quit relying on magnetic compasses for navigation. Yeah. But even the U.S. Coast Guard confirms that it is one of two spots on the earth that for some reason there is this magnetic variation because of something, some sediment in the earth or something there where the compass points true north. So if you're an unexperienced sailor or pilot, you're going to be expecting it to be pointing to magnetic north, not true north. And then it's going to kind of.
Well, and actually even experienced because you get disoriented.
Right.
You know, they talked about a lot about disorientation and where the water can look like the sky and the sky can look like the water because of reflection and all these, you know, different variables. So, you know, it's one of those things like when you're flying, you know, whatever, even if you're experienced or you're on a boat, you're sailing, you're shipping, you
I'm
know,
on
whatever.
A boat.
Yeah, you're on a boat, and I feel a song coming on.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and make a rule that I'm never gonna navigate. I'm not going to be in charge of navigation through the Bermuda Triangle because I can't even make it through the doctor's office. If the sky looks like the ground, I'm just fucking spinning. Yeah.
See, I'm in though. See, I'm all in. If we ever became rich and famous because of the podcast, I would be 100% down to charter a boat and put Brent at the helm of navigation.
Sure. Yeah.
And we just go out and see what happens.
Yeah, because we'd land totally somewhere. Down.
Flight 19 is what
happens.
Exactly.
We're gonna land in Atlantis. Thanks, Brent. You got us to Atlantis.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Flight 19, and I think that really deserves a discussion because Flight 19 is really where the Bermuda Triangle starts. I mean, the discussion that gave it the name that when Vincent Gaddis named it the Bermuda Triangle, it was him discussing a thing called Flight 19, which took place during World War II. And I did read, by the way, that like I read in a couple of articles, it goes beyond that. Like even Christopher Columbus claimed to record bizarre compass readings in his 1492 voyage. And then I read other stuff and it was like, nope, he never.
Oh, really? Because I read that he saw lights. I saw that multiple places that he had reported seeing lights and saying problems with the compass. But the compass can be attributed to the whole compass thing that we just know now. He didn't know.
Did he have a magnetic compass or was it like a
he would
like
have
the light on the, you know.
He definitely would have had a magnetic compass and he probably also would have had other.
That reminds me, I'm going to watch Vikings tonight.
I got to catch up.
Okay. So Flight 19, there were a type of plane called an Avenger torpedo bomber. And this was in December 5th, 1945. So smack dab in the middle of World War II. And there's a training mission on this day. And they called it Flight 19. It was led by a guy. The flight leader was Lieutenant Charles Carroll Taylor, who had 2,500 hours flying, and the majority of them were in this exact aircraft. So this guy's no joke. He's no slouch.
Very experienced.
Very experienced. He had just done a tour like of combat in this very plane. So he knew this plane inside out, and he's training the new pilots. The new pilots had 300 hours of flight training in total, which isn't astounding. But it's not like they're new at this. It's not
and
like
only
never
60
been
in the Avengers, though.
60 in the Avengers, But the main guy who was calling the shots knew what he was doing, and he had been flying training missions at this exact spot for a very long time. So him getting...
Had he been training in that spot?
I think he had.
I thought he was new to that spot.
No, he'd flown there before.
I think he had flown there before. But so there were 14 people, I forget how many planes, five planes, 14 people, all were lost on this particular incident that led to the naming of the Bermuda Triangle.
They showed up nowhere. No wreckage. They didn't show up anywhere else.
They found multiple planes over the years that they keep thinking are these planes, but then when they check tail numbers or serial numbers, they confirm that it's not.
This is where the alien abductions come
in. All the weird theory. Cause everybody says we should have found these planes somewhere by now, because the ocean isn't that deep there. There's so much diving. There's so much that happens in that corridor. We probably should have found these planes.
Which Steven Spielberg did the whole Close Encounters. Those guys that got off were Flight 19 and Close Encounters.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you see Flight 19 show up in Close Encounters. But they were training for what they call navigation problem number one. Okay. Which means it couldn't have been that fucking tricky because it was number one.
Right.
Which navigation problem is it? Number one, bitches.
This is the first one that happens.
This is fucking day one shit.
Apparently Taylor had that problem. He couldn't fix it.
And it's one where they're trying to do a bombing and they're doing a navigation, with limited information of where their location is. And for some reason, no clock.
I was just going to say, it's notable that when they did their pre-flight check, there were no clocks. Like, how does that happen? They're like, that's weird. Why did we take the clocks out? Like, all five planes don't have clocks. And then they said, it's okay. Every man has a watch.
Everyone has a watch.
Yeah, but that's navigation problem number one.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Maybe that was it.
No clocks. Yeah, no clocks. They don't know what time it is.
Yep.
So they took off, and a lot of the radio, there's confirmation from a ton of what was said by this flight because it was being recorded by the Air Force whenever they could pick it up. It was being monitored by search planes, by other craft. Like, everyone is listening to these stations, the entire military. So they're hearing this. And then as soon as they also discovered there was a problem, everybody was told, hey, there's a problem of Flight 19, so everyone was listening in. So there were tons of ears.
And I
all
heard
over
some of
place.
It, and I was kind of curious as like, was that a reenactment? So now that you're saying it was recorded,
it was real.
That's the real audio. That's cool.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of the actual audio.
Yeah, some of those documentaries about Flight 19 have.
They were arguing. You know, like there, it was actually actually kind of cool because once they got to the point where they didn't know where they were, one of the students was actually telling the other guy like, "No, we need to head west now."
Yeah,
and the other guy's like, "Nope." And they just,
they said they attributed, they like it. They said, man, why didn't they just head west themselves, regardless of communication problems and whatnot? But they attributed it to military.
You follow what the guy says. Discipline.
Right. You follow this guy who did 2,500 hours and is the shit. I mean, it's like, you know, you got Top Gun right in front of you. You're going to listen to what he says, you know, and you're also going to be thinking, oh shit, this must be part of navigation problem number one.
Unless you're Maverick. Yeah, like, we're Mavericks. You hit the brakes and they fly right by.
Yeah. They're actually arguing and you can kind of tell that the guy's like, nope, like this is what we're gonna do. Yeah, like I'm leading this and this is what we're doing.
So this is all on December 5th, 1945. So at 1500 hours, they overheard the final pilot ask to deliver his final bomb on the training exercise, which proved that their training was officially done. Yeah. They dropped all their fake bombs into the ocean. And at 1500 hours, he asked to deliver the last bomb and he was confirmed that he could do it. The radio chatter at the time said that they thought they were over the Florida Keys, but then it starts to come out that they were totally lost. They say that you hear people saying that their compass bearings aren't correct. They can't tell east from west. The thing that's odd to me is the IFF, which is what they call identification friend or foe transmitter that lets you know this is one of your planes because it's transmitting this proper signal. Like, they didn't seem to be working on any of the planes.
Yeah.
And the IFF things should have let the Air Force know, be able to triangulate based on radio signals where they were. But for some reason, all five of the planes didn't have functional IFFs. Which is very strange.
Maybe that was problem number one.
That was problem number two. Okay, so yeah, we're doing problem number one with a variation. We take their clocks, we shut off their IFFs.
Problem one and a half. that's what's up.
Yeah, problem 1.5. Yeah. So a lot of just strange stuff in the first place. The fact that the IFF transmitters weren't transmitting is kind of strange.
They started reporting that the water looked green or something, too.
Yeah, they say...
Like he says, Taylor says, they say, what's the trouble? He says, both of my compasses are out. And then he replied, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm overland, but it's broken.
Did they split up?
He says, I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know. Like he's like, they think they're in the area and they're lost.
And they don't know. He said, quote, we are entering white water. Nothing seems right. We don't know where we are. The water is green, not white.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Who fucking knows?
Like green foamy water, yeah.
I have no idea.
Mars.
But that was one of his descriptions, which is very strange. But they did stick together as far as everyone can tell, because at 1904, Taylor's last message that anyone heard him saying was, all planes close up tight, will have to ditch unless landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, we all go down together.
Yikes.
That was the last transmission.
Yeah,
that was.
Well, he said basically what they said on the audio. He says we have like so much fuel left. He says, yeah, when we have 10 minutes left of flight, then we're going to go down and land in the water together. That's exactly the.
Is there some chance that they have, like, back then they had ejection seats and flotation devices, and there was some type of.
I don't think they had they weren't jets.
Like, no, they didn't have ejection seats.
So they go down. They're just hoping they can skip a stone with their plane and somehow get out and go grab arms and try to tread water. Or
well, the planes would kind of float. So like they could land in the water and they would just be together in the water.
And then if one of them got jacked up, I mean, you've got 14 other guys.
And you know a search party's coming.
There's 14 people
there. Yeah, I was
trying
to figure that out. Those are the same kind of planes. How many guys were in the plane? I saw 14 lives lost, 5 planes. That's a weird number. Like,
maybe there was
three dudes in a bunch of planes and 2 guys in one.
They're torpedo bombers, so maybe they were multiple crew. They must have been. I mean,
maybe that was problem number one. They had extra people on board.
People on the wings.
Yeah. Jose was in the back of the tail section.
Problem number one.
With things.
Yeah, too many chiefs, not enough Indians, bakers in the kitchen.
I don't know enough about the plane to say what the normal crew complement is, but 14 people.
Well, maybe it was 3 people in 4 of the planes and 2 people in 1.
Yeah. Like, that would make sense. Like 2 people on the trainer's plane because they don't have to actually drop the bombs.
I said that like 30 seconds ago, but yeah.
Did you?
That's all I think. Yeah, I know. It's all right.
I don't even listen to you. You weren't even talking.
I didn't hear that. I think that statement got lost in the Bermuda Triangle.
Maybe.
You should sleep on that.
It's starting to. So the other thing that's creepy about Flight 19, though, is all this is happening. So that last message goes out at 1904. But at 1800, the Air Force sent out 2 PBM Mariner seaplanes and a ship to start searching. Before they crashed, they knew this flight was in trouble. They'd been doing confusing radio chatter, everybody arguing, like you said. They don't know where they are. They think they're over the Keys. They don't think they're over the Keys. They can't tell east from west, which they say more than once. Our compass is, which says more than a compass anomaly that's just pointing to true north versus magnetic north.
Yeah.
No, that's saying I can't tell east from fucking west. That's some wacky compass.
They might have been going south. Like nobody knows.
Well, that's why the one guy's like, just put the sun to your side or whatever he said to try to help him navigate.
Yeah.
You would think a pilot would at least know that.
They were all trained to do that. That was standard operating procedure. If you got lost, that was what you did. They knew basic things of if your compass goes south, if you get lost, this is what you do to get back to land. So they should have been able to do it.
Yeah. And I was watching the documentary and it talked about when you're up in the air and especially they were losing light, they delayed the flight. It's supposed to go out at 3 something and it went out at 4 something.
Right.
And so it was, by this time it's getting dark.
Right.
You're losing sight of the horizon. Maybe the sun was already down.
Right.
I don't know. When you're up in the air, I haven't really flown in a small aircraft, so I wouldn't know what it looks like when you're up in the air and the sun's going down, if there's light on both sides or how that looks.
Yeah, I
would think that one side would be darker than the other.
You would imagine.
But So I guess it was attributed to it's getting dark. Like they don't know, you know, what's going on, which way's what. So maybe they couldn't see the horizon. Maybe it was cloudy. I don't know.
That's
there's
horrifying.
So many.
That's so scary.
Well, no, they say that it was fair conditions. They didn't say.
It said fair air weather or the sea was rough to moderate. Though,
the sea was rough, yeah. But the weather conditions were clear. So even though the sea was rough, they would have had clear visuals.
Well, and I guess they knew if they said the water is green, like they could see. Like, so I don't know. Like, there's so many weird, like the way they talk.
But
the
even
way
that, even that statement, if that is a true statement about the water change, it doesn't make any sense. We are entering white water. Nothing seems right. We don't know where we are. The water is green, not white.
You just said it rhymes.
So it's kind of funky because it's kind of a rhyme.
Maybe white water meant rough waters.
Yeah, but he says we are entering white waters. In the very next sentence, he says the water is green, not white. The fuck are you talking
about?
Maybe
it changed.
I guess.
I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
That's where, there's so many weird things that are surrounding what they're saying.
The other weird, like to me, I knew about Flight 19. I knew they went missing. I knew that was what sort of started the Bermuda Triangle thing. I knew all that going into the research. What I did not know is that at 1930 hours, one of the rescue ships calls in routinely that they're still searching for Flight 19.
Yeah.
And at 2115, a tanker ship, the SS Gaines Mills, reports an explosion 100 feet in the air that burned for 10 minutes, which is weird.
Yeah.
Like 100 feet in the air burning for 10 minutes is quite a fucking flame.
Right. Yeah.
They headed there and they searched for survivors in a pool of oil. And they lost all radio contact, et cetera. But one of the search planes looking for Flight 19 exploded in midair while they were looking for Flight 19.
Hmm. Yeah. But they said that one was known for like vapor, like fuel leaking issues. And that's not the first time that had happened with that plane.
They sent out the largest search party at, what was it? Over 200 planes.
And after they went down, or I didn't read it because I knew at the time they had two planes and a ship involved, but I don't know
that
what
was, that was immediately
to.
The next morning
while it was happening. That was
yeah, the next happened. Morning, they sent out over 200 planes and like 50 vessels or something like that. It was something like crazy.
It wouldn't be unheard of. I mean, they would have been training for all of their Pacific flights right there.
Yeah.
So they would have had more planes they knew what to do with. And they probably
they
would have even
them,
been saying, this is a good training exercise looking for survivors, like get them all up in the air. But so A, the flight disappears, weird radio readings, weird compass anomalies. Apparently they don't know what they're doing, et cetera. And B, one of the rescue ships explodes in midair the same exact day. So that is, and even with
crazy
the
things,
record of those planes blowing up, that is a hell of a coincidence. And even if that plane, I guess it could have crashed into all five planes of Flight 19 and
maybe.
They all crashed.
Yeah.
But the reason I don't think that's possible is because at 1904 is when he said, when we drop below 10 gallons, we all go down together. This is 2115. When that rescue ship blows up. So I doubt they could have gone, you know, 2 hours and 11 minutes when they were already worried. They were already making a plan to ditch any minute now.
Yeah, because
last radio communication, he says, I don't know, I might have 30, maybe 20 minutes of fuel left. So at that time, they wouldn't have made it.
So this is like two hours plus later when that rescue plane. So the odds that the rescue plane ran into Flight 5 is very rare. The odds that
Flight
the rescue
five,
plane,
five,
the five planes, the odds that the rescue plane ran into all five planes is really difficult to imagine. But that's
just the timing. The timing isn't
right. The timing kind of makes it strange.
Unless they stopped for fuel and got fuel and were flying back.
Like a 7-Eleven or something?
Yeah, they parked, picked up some Slurpees, partied a little
for
bit
sure.
in the Bahamas.
That happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Too soon, guys. Too soon. Yeah.
Too soon for Flight 19.
Yeah, don't be making jokes about that, okay? It's still still in the heart.
We got some time still.
Yeah.
So the final naval report, when everything was said and done, said that Taylor mistaked small islands for the Florida Keys, and it confirmed like they were totally not where they thought they were. Taylor was ruled not at fault since all of their compasses were known to have stopped working based on all of their radio transmissions. Otherwise, they would have labeled him as at fault. But the naval research reading over all the transcripts basically confirmed all of them were saying none of their compasses worked.
That's weird. I think that's Jimmy Mahoney, weird. The naval prankster, climbed in there, took their clocks and put magnets behind their compasses.
What are you going to do to him? Fuck that Taylor guy. I'm taking his clock. Yeah. I'm turning off his IFF. Somebody, and I'm fucking with his compass.
Somebody banged somebody's girlfriend and they got magnets in the compasses.
Just, I just don't know where the logic is to not go west. You know, if one of the guys knew that west was this way.
Well, they said somewhere, I don't know how to even figure out what west is.
Right, they were saying they couldn't figure out what west
so was. So weird. Maybe, I wonder if it was some sort of ploy to get out of the military and they flew somewhere.
I'm sticking with Jimmy Mahoney and the magnets.
Maybe. Like, that's a great band. Jimmy Mahoney and the Magnets.
Yeah.
Their cover of Bubbly Water.
That's our band name.
No.
But yep.
You are Jimmy Mahoney.
No, maybe so. Maybe they just fucking landed in Bahamas, sold the planes to somebody, and fucking peaced out because they didn't want to go to Japan and get shot.
Yep.
You know.
If we had pictures of them, the guys, we could probably, you know, put him up against somebody else.
Hitler, that guy looks Hitler, Tupac, like, and the Challenger guys are all hanging out.
Yeah,
and maybe. To tell you, I mean, this wasn't the safest place to fly, which again I think ties into the myth of the Bermuda Triangle, because between 1942 and 1945, there were training accidents that accounted for 95 aviation deaths in that area.
Yeah. They're bad at training.
95 deaths in 3 years. That's, I mean, they were towards the end of those 3 years. Right. That's a fucking lot, which again, doesn't necessarily mean there's something mysterious happening here so much as we're at World War II. Like, we're flying so many flights of dangerous shit with bombs in your
plane. People are going to go down.
With people who don't know how to fly, and shit's just going to happen and people are going to go down.
Yeah,
and guess what? You want to know how many are dying per day in the Pacific in these planes? Hell of a lot more than fucking 95 in 3 years. I mean, there were training exercise deaths all the time. But again, I couldn't find any stats to compare that to what it was anywhere else where there was training.
Yeah, it's
so
like
I can't make that comparison.
It's like a weird thing. Like, every other thing we've looked up, you know, all the studies we've done, and when I say we, I mean Dave and Brent. anything you look up, you can find stats on, or you know what I mean? Like, they're like, dude, like, oh, there's this, this, and this, and these are the, this is how it breaks down. This is a whole different monster.
No, I was getting so frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, like, the Coast Guard doesn't even have an official file. I think it was the Coast Guard. Didn't have an official file on Bermuda Triangle because, for one, they don't even acknowledge that name.
They don't.
Navy doesn't exist as a name. It doesn't make the top 10 of most dangerous parts of the ocean.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make the top 10 list. It's like not acknowledged. They're like, it's nothing. Like, they fly over and they said it's just normal.
Well, because that's what I want to know. How many, you know, like.
It's the most traveled trade route.
Yeah. Coast Guard is saving 11,000 lives a year there. How many people are they losing? Like, where are their boats being missing? No.
Right.
Like, they're not saying. But this is the other thing. Is there some sort of cover-up? And here's the conspiracy. Is there some sort of cover-up to where, like I mentioned earlier, there are, like, links to alien abduction and, like, things just coming up missing? Like, is there something that the government knows that we don't, that they're not letting out, that they're not putting out the stats? Because, you know,
stats are just not, I mean,
non-existent.
It was like in my notes, like I always take notes of, like, these are the things I definitely want to look into.
Right.
And then I end up running into shit that I never knew about. And then I look into that as well. And then I keep going back to my original things that I need to look up. And one of those things that I just couldn't cross off my list is a comparison. I don't care what era. I just wanted a comparison between the stats of what happens in the Bermuda Triangle compared to the rest of the world.
Right.
And every single article I found, every single skeptical website I found, they all pointed back to this same guy's book in 1975, and they all pointed back to that Nova special in 1976.
Yep. And there's no actual numbers.
There were no numbers ever listed.
Yep.
And it was like, that was the only thing that was out there. It was a book called The Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved by Lawrence David Koosh. Great name.
Koosh.
Who was a research librarian from Arizona State University, and he wrote this book in 75, and I'm assuming the book doesn't have real stats in it, or all of these skeptical websites would have used the actual stats.
Right.
They all just said, according to this book, there's no statistical anomaly. And I know, like I said, that Nova special on PBS in 76 cited the book. So I think everyone points back to this book, and I can't in the age of Googles and YouTubes and interwebs, nobody's fucking looked into this since then, because I couldn't find it.
Some of the things I did find, at least, was some explanations for why there might be like stuff surrounding that. For one, the compass magnetic north anomaly. Field, yeah. That's a big thing.
That's a known thing there.
Yeah. The what is it? The Mid-Atlantic Drift or whatever it is. The Finding Nemo thing. What's that thing called?
I have no idea.
The river and the ocean. Nemo. God dang it. It's the Gulf Stream. God, I can think of that. The Gulf Stream flows through there.
Yeah.
If debris does happen, it probably gets swept away pretty fast. Like, yeah. I think the water, yes. Yeah, it moves really fast.
It moves it.
So that could attribute to why like the vanishings are so like, oh, something happened, but we can't find anything. Yeah. Lots of ships go down and they know what happened.
Yeah, they did say that the Coast Guard said that there were multiple like sunken ships and stuff that just disappeared, and they had what is it, the IFF device, the ISS device,
mm-hmm.
what is
IFF.
It? IFF device, which is on board so that they can be found. There were multiple instances where ships went missing that had those devices on board and they just could not find them.
Right.
So Did the debris get swept away?
And if the Gulf Stream is powerful enough and it runs right through there, then yeah, as soon as you get to a certain depth under the surface, you're going to hit that Gulf Stream. And instead of you just sinking straight down like a stone, your ass is going to get carried by that Gulf Stream to God knows where.
Yeah.
Because that's a very, very fast.
Ship's still sailing.
Yeah, underwater. The ship's still sailing underwater. And so, I mean, especially with Flight 19, these are pretty small planes.
Yeah.
They would have hit that Gulf Stream and God knows where they would have ended up.
Just depending on where they were at. If they were, a lot of things say that they were, the land that they could see was the Bahamas, and if they would have just flown west, they would have hit Florida in a matter of 10-20 minutes, I guess. So
right. You guys saw the other thing I read was the methane gas release. You guys see some of that?
Yeah, we can definitely. Yeah, let's. Yeah. That's because there's a lot of explanations. Some of them
you still got more
sane.
Stories, huh?
No. I mean, there's a couple of other notable sinkings. The USS Cyclops, great name.
The Avenger.
That was the largest loss of life in a non-combat naval event.
Yeah.
Yeah, 318 people, I think.
That was there.
How many died on the Titanic? I don't know. I thought that was the largest.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, if you're going to call me out accurately.
I think the USS Cyclops was still a military.
Maybe it's the largest loss of military life in non-combat. Right, yeah, Brad's probably got that.
There was another ship called the Carol A. Deering, which was found run aground and abandoned near Cape Hatteras in the 1920s. Just empty ship. Nobody was there, but they found the ship. Nothing strange on the log. They don't know where any of the crew of the ship went. Several planes from British South American Airways went down in the course of 49 and 48. So there's some reputable, missing, mysterious things in there. But I think if this is true, you wanted to talk about the methane hydrates.
Right.
And that's definitely a thing. And it's been a theory for a while. And it was a theory that was just reconfirmed like 3 days ago from this recording by a bunch of like Norwegian researchers. So what did you find out about
it's basically the theory that there's large methane stores under the bed of the ocean in that area. And that when those release, it causes like a fizz, like it looks like soda or something. Like this methane release comes up, and when the bubbles come up to the surface, it changes the buoyancy of the
white water.
Yeah. So they've done it in labs. They can recreate it and they do it and it will sink the ship right away. But the problem and they even say that in the air, as it releases into the atmosphere, it could cause problems for planes flying through the methane release.
Right.
Your engines are running off gas and they need air, and then you feel it changes everything. The weight of the gas is different than air. So if you flew through it as a plane, or if you were landing on the water, which I don't, they threw that out there. I don't think it's very common that people are like flying planes and landing in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle in a plane. But
well, here's the other thing though, that from what I had read, because I had read for years that one of the ideas behind the Bermuda Triangle is methane trapped in the ocean floor that gets released.
Right.
What I didn't read, specifically the methane hydrate, is even weirder, because what they're talking about is methane from like massive ancient plankton deposits that have always been always under deep water pressure.
The ocean fart.
Yeah, that's what they
call it.
Burps of death is actually what oil like deep sea divers and like
normally when you fart you light a match.
Well, it says
don't light a match.
Oil workers call it. It says they haven't occurred since the last ice age, so it kind of busts the myth.
15,000 years.
Well, but here's the thing though, because
12,000.
The reason this is weird is it does, because of the pressure, it doesn't form as gas. It forms as a solid, which is why they call it a methane hydrate.
So it's a methane.
And it forms as like this this white crystal, and I saw a picture of it. It's actually kind of pretty, but it's like this soapstone like methane solid based on the pressure.
Right.
But if something happened, if there was a massive storm where the currents got deep enough, or if there was some sort of tectonic activity, massive parts of this methane hydrate would break from the ocean floor and start to rise. And as soon as it loses the proper depth, it goes from solid to gas. And it said that that can cause it to just be a massive explosion. As soon as it hits the point where it goes from a solid to a gas, all of the methane just blows up.
At once.
So if that was happening, and they did find, I saw one map that showed methane hydrate running, a huge field of it running from South Carolina down through the Bahamas to Cuba. So like all the way along the Florida shore, there is evidence of methane hydrates that are there. And the thing that they just found a couple of days ago, the Arctic University of Norway discovered giant underground craters in the Barents Sea, which is nowhere near the Bermuda Triangle. And they are up to a mile wide and 150 feet deep. And they think that they are caused from methane hydrate explosion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the research
blows up underneath the,
exactly,
underneath the seabed.
So the researchers at one hand said this could be what's happening in the Bermuda Triangle on a very small scale. But on the other hand, they said, however, the scale that we're seeing is absolutely massive and ancient.
Yeah.
Like if it was an explosion that's a mile wide,
we'd know about it.
Oh, for sure.
But even if there was a small bit that rised up, I mean, that maybe that would explain this weird the 100 foot flame 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a big methane hydrate.
That'd be gas burning off. That's exactly what I was going to say. That would make sense if it came out of the, you know what I mean? It came out, created a bubble, blew up, burned for 10 minutes and then went out.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense.
And that could be what happened to all the planes in the area at that time. It's just that, like I said, on the ocean floor, they don't see the evidence, but it could just be, I mean, then again, looking at the Gulf Stream, they could have broke
swept
off
away.
And fucking got swept away several miles before it made it to the surface.
There's so many variables.
Yeah, there's so many variables.
Yeah. It's real simple. There's aliens. That's it.
That is another very common.
That's what I said.
Very common.
Also, you guys are dismissing water squatch. That's a waterborne Sasquatch.
I am dismissing water squatch.
Yeah, it's
didn't he have a different name though?
No, it's called water. It's Bigfoot with floaties.
It's Bigfoot. He's got little yellow rubber ducky floaties on his arm. Mm-hmm.
And how's out
he
there? Like,
how's he sinking the boat?
He doesn't move fast, but you let him get close.
He's
enough,
out there just floating around eating beef jerky, and then all of a sudden, like,
and then he hulks out.
Yeah,
crashes a plane. Yeah.
Quite a
messing with water squatch.
But tons of people point to UFOs. I mean, it's a huge thing. You look at Bermuda Triangle. And the Bermuda Triangle, again, like I said, it really blew up in the 70s.
Right.
Like when you look at most accounts, most research, most everything that's really digging into the Bermuda Triangle, it tends to be like late 70s because that
was
when
UFO.
It was on. That's when it was on In Search Of by Leonard Nimoy, and it was on Nova. And I mean, it was really, really popular at the time. That's when people were writing these books about it. That was pre-internet. There's no Netflix. What the fuck else are you going to do but wonder about the Bermuda Triangle?
Read your Bible in the hut.
Read your Bible in the hut. But there were tons of people that obviously claim it's UFOs. My favorite is people think it's Atlantis, right? So a lot of people think that the submerged rock formation known as the Bimini Road in the Bahamas, they think this is evidence of the ancient civilization.
Some say Bimini. It's another one of those Caribbean things.
Bimini. Yeah. I have no idea.
Bimini. I don't know.
Bimini Bobbity Boo.
You know what? I just read something. Sorry to cut you off.
About time. Yeah. Finally, you read something.
It talks about Lieutenant Taylor. I guess he had a problem with getting lost.
Oh, fuck.
There was a history of him getting lost. It said he got lost three times during World War II and being forced to ditch his plane twice into the water before.
Oh, okay.
So this is
My favorite novel of all times is a book called Catch 22.
Right. I have it. It's on my nightstand.
It's fucking fantastic. And it's about bomber pilots in World War II in Italy.
Yeah.
And one of the plot points is there's one of the guys in the flight squadron. No one wants to fly with him because he always crashes his plane. He always gets lost. He always crashes
That's
his plane.
Taylor.
And he always washes up on shore. And then towards the middle of of the novel, he starts talking to the main character saying, you really want to fly with me tomorrow. Like, do what you have to do. Come fly with me tomorrow. Do not fly with your regular team. Trust me. Please come fly with me tomorrow. And then that day when they do their bombing raid, his plane goes down like in some other area. And he basically, everyone knows that, all the pilots know, he faked a crash landing because he's been practicing it. And then he like sailed away to Switzerland or something.
Oh, wow.
Where he just got out of the war.
And, that tells you my story about him.
Right,
flying
he was
off
practicing.
And, yeah.
Yeah, he was practicing.
Well, they flew off and they flew into this thing to get out of the military so they could take off and just be who they wanted to be.
There you go.
And yeah, it makes sense.
Right now, and by the way, they're all the grandparents of the astronauts on the Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to merge.
I tried that earlier. I said Tupac, Elvis, and Challengers or something. Didn't work out.
So Atlantis, big thought, Atlantis is under, this is like big, you know, wackadoo conspiracy theorist land. Atlantis is under there. We had talked about Edgar Cayce on our previous episode. Mm-hmm. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to that, because we talk about that a little bit. But one of the ideas is that there's this Bimini Bobbidi Boo Road in the Bahamas.
There you go.
And they discovered it in 1968. Edgar Cayce, the psychic, claimed that they would discover Atlantis in 1968, and that was when they discovered the Bippity Boppity Boo Road. So it all worked. But one of the theories that Edgar Cayce said is that there was in Atlantis they had a thing called the Towie Stone, and it was.
I think you called it something different. In
maybe
episode,
I don't know. Yeah. Now I'm calling it Towie.
Towie,
I think is what I said.
Yeah.
Anyway, this giant crystal that could summon electricity from the heavens and control weather and all this stuff that the Atlanteans used as the core of their civilization.
You can get little ones at Sharper Image that have small versions.
They got too greedy and they blew up Atlantis and destroyed it with their crystal. But there's this guy in 1970 named Dr. Ray Brown. And he claims that while he was scuba diving, he came upon a pyramid-like structure with a smooth mirrored stone finish. He swam inside and found that it was free of coral and algae and illuminated by some unknown light source. And inside was a sculpture of of human hands holding a 4-inch crystal sphere, above which was suspended a red gem and a brass rod.
Sounds like an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
It sounds like a.
What year was that?
Indiana Jones
and
the Underwater Temple.
That was in 1970. So he claims that was near the Bimini Bobbidi Boo Road, but he was unable to ever find it.
Oh, again. I was going to say,
what a fucking coincidence. No, can't find it again.
I watched something that said like French like underwater people had confirmed it as well. Like two separate parties had confirmed the existence of that structure.
Where's it at? Can't find it.
Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Yeah, exactly. It's in Bimini Bobbidi Boo Road. So, but anyway, these claims back in the 70s made everyone go, oh shit, there's something going on down there.
All these claims are from the 70s.
Yes.
Like that's
you know why?
60s and 70s.
Because back then you could just lie about shit and no one call you out.
That's right. There was no Google internet to fucking search that shit.
Yeah. Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo wasn't on the map.
I have three others that are crazy. One of the theories is that
okay, you laughed to yourself.
This is from psychiatrist Dr. Kenneth McCall of Brooks Lyndhurst in England. I have no idea what Brooks Lyndhurst is, but I'm assuming it's a place where fucking crazy people go to write shit.
It's prestigious.
He says in his book called Healing the Haunted, that the Bermuda Triangle's entire situation is caused by the souls of miserable black slaves.
What? I just made a weird noise.
I'm over here bobbing my head.
Yes, he is.
I was fine with miserable souls until it got all the way to unique.
That turned Brad into a bobblehead. So
that idea is just bouncing around in my head right now.
He claims in his book, and this is a quote from his book, as we drifted gentle in the now warm and steamy atmosphere, it's suddenly turning into like a penthouse
novel.
As we drifted gentle in the now warm and steamy atmosphere, I became aware of a continuous sound like mournful singing. I thought it must be a record player in the crew's quarters.
Yuck.
As it continued through a second night, I finally, in exasperation, went below to ask if it could be stopped. However, the sound down there was the same it was everywhere else, and the crew were equally mystified.
Mm.
So it's the soul of dead black slaves.
Why is it
black based off slaves? That one event?
Like,
well, that's what.
Why does it gotta be black?
Because they were black slaves.
Are you sure?
Pretty much.
How does he know? Where their voice is like, oh, man,
I think if you're dealing with that area, odds are the slaves would have been black.
The slave trade route?
Yes. Two other options that I'll throw out there. One, which I didn't really look into in any meaningful way, is that there is a rift in space-time in the Bermuda Triangle, and that occasionally it opens, and if you're in a plane or a boat, you just come out somewhere else in space-time.
Well, that's logical.
You didn't even look into that? You look into the black slaves? You didn't look into that one?
I couldn't.
That seems pretty
it.
That seems real.
I couldn't look into the rift
that
in
space-time.
That
was like based on science.
Yeah, but you see this racistness going on right
it
now.
Is.
Yeah.
It
looked into the black slave thing.
Black lives matter.
Yeah.
Lives matter, Dave.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Black lives
matter. And then the final one that's out there, again, 1970, is electronic fog. And there were two cats named Bruce Gernon and Rog McGregor, and they flew through the Bermuda Triangle.
Is this
in 1970.
The spiral tunnel?
Yes.
Yeah.
They encountered a strange phenomenon. It was a tunnel or a vortex, and their plane's wings scraped the side of it, and they couldn't leave it. All electronic and navigational instruments went out. The compass spun like crazy. They passed through the tunnel and exited into a blue sky, or expected to see a blue sky, but they saw a dull gray and white for miles. No ocean, no sky, no horizon. They flew for 34 minutes, according to all the records on their plane. And when they came out of the vortex and were clear back into the sky, they were over Miami, which is a flight that should have taken 75 minutes instead of 34 minutes.
I saw the interview with that guy, like on a little mini documentary.
Oh, did you?
He seems like a normal dude. Like he didn't seem like he's making.
What happened was he fell asleep at the wheel after too much whiskey.
That doesn't make any sense, though. He's not going to make him go 35 minutes, you know. That's not going to change the time of the trip.
That's like the movie Contact.
Well, if something can mess with compasses and whatnot, it can also mess with clocks. So who knows?
At least he has his clocks.
Not just his clock, though. Probably the flight tower. Like, people are recording that stuff. They get monitored.
I don't know.
He seemed legit. I don't know what I'm saying. Seems like a nice guy. I'd hang out with him. If I have a barbecue and I can figure out where he's at, man, he's invited.
Yep.
But the things that I'm the most interested in that I encountered in all of my research of the Bermuda Triangle, ironically, have nothing to do with the Bermuda Triangle. There's a guy named Oliver Lee Carer, and he wrote a book that I actually really want to read called Atlas of Cursed Places, a travel guide for dangerous and frightful destinations. He wrote this recently, and he traveled around the world to places that are supposedly cursed to see what he could see or find out or whatever. He finally said you can break down all cursed places to three things. One is it's a physically hostile environment, which is what he says the Bermuda Triangle is.
Yeah,
right.
It's one of the key places for typhoons, for storms,
water spouts, like the
Gulf Stream. Like, it's just like fucking pirates, even to this
day. It has extremely rough waters.
Water squash was there.
I mean, so that alone, he thinks, can explain the Bermuda Triangle. Sure. But he says there's three categories: physically hostile environment, human activity, which you add extra human activity into a hostile environment, and you get the third, which is a combination of both.
Yeah.
Right.
Sounds like my house, man.
That's right. So the thing that I liked is he said that he went to Amityville. He went to a place called Satan's Synagogue, which sounds fantastic. And he pretty much like rules all these places out. And at the end of the interview I read with him, they said, of all the places that you look at, what are ones that you're actually interested in? And he said, first off, I would really love to go to Nevada Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never even heard of.
That's a land-based one?
Yeah, I guess. It's in Nevada.
That's where regular squatch is at.
We're going,
that's,
man. That's not that far away, man.
That's where hooker squatch
is. We can't right now go to the Bermuda Triangle, but we can go to the Nevada Triangle.
And
but
whatever, if we take the time tunnel, it only takes 35 minutes to go.
That's right.
If we get our
vortex. Yes. But anyway, the guy...
We get that going.
The guy whose job is to debunk creepy places says that whatever the fuck the Nevada Triangle is creepy enough or dangerous enough that he would actually go visit. And then the other one is he said Eileen Moore's Lighthouse, which is I looked up and it's really fucking creepy. It's had nothing to do with Bermuda Triangle. It's off the coast of Scotland. It's a place called the Eileen Moor, and there's a lighthouse there that was run by the Scottish military. Shit. So three seasoned sailors were stationed there. They kept a log, like a daily log of what was happening, et cetera. But a ship was flying there, or a ship was sailing there. And I want to say this was in the 1920s. I forget the exact date, but the lighthouse wasn't lit. So everybody was worried and you could see it from the shore. It wasn't very far. I mean, everyone could see the lighthouse from the shore at Scotland. The lighthouse wasn't lit. So this ship sailed, weighed anchor near the island, sent a small ship up to find out why the lighthouse wasn't lit. Cause there's three trained sailors in there lighting the lighthouse. So no one runs adrift. They get there. The front door of the lighthouse is completely open. They walk in. They find that there's oil slicked coats, which is what would keep them dry back in the day. Yeah. There's one set of coats and boots and everything still sitting there, and two are gone. So they're like, well, obviously one of the people is still here. They look around. No one's there. The lighthouse isn't lit. They start to look into the logbook, and everyone is writing logs about the fact that this storm is the worst storm they've ever seen. It's been raging for days. It's so strong, it's shaking the lighthouse, and we can't take it anymore. The most seasoned sailor was in the other room for a day, bawling and crying because of what he saw in the storm. They ended up saying something like, "We see God in the storm." I forget the exact term. And that was like the last entry, and all three of them are gone.
From like 50 years.
What year was that? I want to say it was the 1920. I want to say 1928. I might be completely wrong.
So nobody ate a pot.
Man, a bunch of creepy stuff happened back in the day like that.
But
like,
the thing is, though, on Scotland, you're looking at the island, and this happened on December 14th. There was no storm. There was no storm at all. A storm came through on the 17th after the investigation was already concluded, but there was no storm that hit the island. There was no storm that hit the lighthouse, because it would have been the same storm that hit the coast, because the lighthouse was there for the coast.
Yeah.
So it's like they were stuck in a storm for days that drove them all crazy. They left the lighthouse. One of them didn't even take a coat.
That's pretty
and they're
true.
Just kind of like, gone.
It's peyote or absinthe.
I don't know, man.
I'm trying to think 1920 psychedelics.
But all those like stories from back in the day, like that, there's some creepy stuff
that
goes on
shit.
But okay, so the Nevada Triangle, we can actually go to this. It's from Reno to Fresno to Las Vegas.
Oh snap,
we can make the Fresno
yeah
man.
We can make the Fresno tip right now.
Time tunnel's 10 minutes on that one.
Yeah.
We either close. Get the time tunnel or a hyperloop.
Yeah, so yeah. it starts I mean, that's the tip of the triangle, I guess you could say, because
just
it's like
the
a,
tip.
Just
yeah
the tip.
Just the tip, that's how I give it. So yeah, Fresno, Reno, Las Vegas. So we have to do some research on that about the Nevada Triangle.
Yeah, I wonder what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe we disappear.
Their money disappears in Nevada.
Yeah. That's yeah. Yeah, that's where all the money disappears. And then you get killed in Fresno and you're gone.
And you start out
in Las Vegas and lose half your money, go to Reno, lose the rest, go back to Fresno and you disappear.
And you get mugged by a meth head who steals your Civic in Tijuana.
Yep. So so that's that. So we just figured that out. So.
But anyway, he was particularly alarmed by that, whatever the fuck is happening there, and by this lighthouse. So those are
the lighthouse seems creepy.
Lighthouse. Yeah. I want to read more into it because it was like legitimately
weird stuff goes on with the lighthouse. Cause like the ring, doesn't it have like a lighthouse? It shows a lighthouse where the lady falls
off
the cliff.
Oh, I think it does. Yeah.
Like it's like a weird, like kind of weird. Like,
it's just
know.
A lonely, like solitary, like.
Place.
Symbol, yeah, I think.
I guess,
like throughout history. Like probably always been creepy.
And it's like, important. It's like, A, it's lonely. You're just some dude stuck in a lighthouse, like doing something for society to keep working.
Yeah.
Like I'm keeping your goods, your ships coming in and out of port, you know, by sitting out here all alone in this
lighthouse.
I bet
lighthouse. It's a creepy deal that I have to stay in a lighthouse at night by the ocean all by yourself.
Right. Making sure that thing's lit all night. Yeah, that's a creepy deal.
What's that? Yeah. That Ghost Hunter show, that's the only episode that ever kind of creeped me out a little bit, because I think half that stage and they're just kind of putting it on. But on one of those Ghost Hunter episodes, on the lighthouse episode, they're looking straight up and they're supposedly the only ones in there. And someone grabs the rail and looks down over the rail in the center of the lighthouse on like the thermal film. It's pretty creepy. You can see
it. Oh, that is pretty creepy.
It could still
but
be
they're not
fake.
Really there.
No one's supposed to be there, and someone looks over the railing, like clearly, like grabs the rail and looks down and over at them. And it's like, I mean, maybe it's
no one's
fake.
Supposed to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
but
crazy.
Well, there's only one way out. The dude didn't jump off the lighthouse; they went up the stairs and got there, and no one's there.
Right.
But it is a TV show, and half that stuff's probably fake.
Yeah, so, what are your final thoughts on the Bermuda Triangle? Is there something? Is there nothing?
I think a large loss of ships in a high traffic area during a period with lack of technology as far as like GPS and whatnot probably got like some urban myth started. And people spun tales, you know, I think that there's a lot of campfire story kind of thing behind that period, because we can prove that it has slowed down, since like GPS and stuff has become apparent.
Right.
But I think there might be some of those geographical magnetic, you know, methane anomalies that might cause it. But when I read this, the stuff that you couldn't find much stats, but statistically,
those aren't creepy though.
It wasn't like, supposed to be more than any other place in the ocean. I mean, 3/4 of the earth is covered in water.
Sure.
Like it is a dangerous place to be. You're going to fly over in something like, I'm scared if my car is going to make it across town and the engine dies. When you're in a plane, like there's no pulling over to the curb. Like right. if your engine goes out, especially when they're not doing any kind of maintenance, like making sure they put the clock back, all 5 compasses are broken. You know what I mean? Like
that's some lowest bidder shit right there. Like what I think is just going
the amount of traffic statistically that goes through that portion of it and that, you know, Mid-Atlantic drift thing or whatever that is going to brush the debris away. I think there's probably a reasonable explanation that's scientifically based for all that. And as much as I like to think that aliens are grabbing people and close encounters and all that stuff, I think there's probably a combination of a lot of things like the gas and whatnot. Yeah.
I really was, like I said in the beginning, I really was disappointed. Like I thought it was going to be way creepier, like just unexplained things. Like
I knew right when we started studying, I was like, dang it. Like everything's debunking.
It was right away.
Everything's debunking. Yeah, it's all right exaggerated away. Facts. Can't find source material. When you followed it back far enough, it didn't really happen. Like Dave said, these boats disappeared.
Yeah.
And then they found the boats like a week later, but no one reported that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like I really feel disappointed with it.
Like, I thought those ghost ship things were real, where they're like, oh, the whole crew was gone when they found the boat.
One.
Yeah.
It was abandoned ships.
Yeah.
Like there were reports of that, and people literally abandoned the ships. So it wasn't nothing creepy. Like it was just people left boats out in the open.
Yeah, I found one to me that was because I was waiting. I mean, I already knew the methane. I didn't know the methane hydrate stuff, the solid thing that they just found up in Iceland. But I knew about other, you know, methane stuff.
Right.
I knew about, you know, the magnetic anomalies. I mean, I knew a lot of the really sort of mundane things that can explain what happens, including water squash.
Now, that's a real thing.
That is a real thing. But I was just, I was immediately disappointed at the solid evidence.
Right.
Like I was waiting for like a list as long as my arm of this boat where all these people went missing, this other thing where all this happened. And it's like a couple planes went missing from one airline that, like I said, one boat showed up with nobody on shore and everybody thinks that they were probably, and this was during Prohibition, and everybody thinks that they were probably killed by rum runners during Prohibition and they just like got off the ship, or who knows? I mean, you see it all, like watch fucking Deadliest Catch and you see, you know, interviews of people and they're like, we're on our boat. We think the boat's going down. We have to abandon ship. And then like, I watched one that was this, I think on the Discovery Channel, and it was this guy and he was having a really hard time telling their story, but their ship was like going to sink and they all knew it. And it was a huge storm, you know, out there in the Bering Straits, et cetera.
So scary.
They all got off the ship in their suits, in their thing or whatever. And he tells this fucking horrible story of him and the entire crew. And one by one, they were just floating there waiting to get rescued. And he said that you could just see it. You would just see a look come across somebody's eyes because you were all tied together and you would just see them give up. Up, and within 30 seconds they would sink. And he just said
those suits floated. No,
you still, he said that they just would give up and float away and die. And he said that one by one, and like him and one other girl were like the ones who were there the longest. And he kept trying to give her pep talks and whatever. And he said, eventually I just saw it come across her face. She gave up. She was dead within a couple of minutes and sank. I got picked up a couple minutes after that. They took me back to port and they said, oh, by the way, we found your ship abandoned and we tugged it into port. It didn't sink.
Oh,
it's like, I mean, that shit just happens. If you think your ship's going to sink, you're going to abandon ship, getting a thing. If your shit goes down and your ship rights itself, it's going to drift ashore.
Problem, like just keep climbing onto the roof of the Jaws ship as it goes down. Why, how come you don't put on your suit and try to ride it out and not get into the water?
Well, this guy was saying
that, or something?
Well, his fear was that like the ship, if the ship just gets, the ship's going to get sucked under a massive wave, might split the hull. Like it's just, the ship is going to go down.
You want to get away from it.
And we stand a better chance in a small boat, except they all got tossed off the boat. But
I'm writing it down. I'm not going to put myself in that situation, but if it does, I'm riding the boat.
Yeah, I'm bull riding.
Yeah, that's
right.
On top. But yeah. So anyway, for me, with Flight 19, genuinely mysterious, some weird fucked up shit.
I think it all comes down to a case of poor bad navigation and
yeah,
the guy.
But that, I mean,
now,
is,
now reading that the guy wasn't very good in the first place.
And like, it is a crazy coincidence that the rescue plane exploded in midair the same exact night,
yeah.
which is enough to put the Bermuda Triangle on the map. But like I said, I was waiting for a huge list of evidence of all these ships that went missing, all these people, you know, you hear, you know, there were 10 people on the deck, and when we got on board, all of them were gone. And
there was
it's like,
cap-
no, bullshit. Yeah, it's like, none of it. It's like, yeah. like, there's so, there. I, like I said, I read all of them here on the show. I think there were Flight 19 and four other instances where I thought shit was
legit,
pretty legit. Yeah. And it's like, everything else is just questionable and dubious.
And there's a million and, YouTube and, versions
and
of every
and even
one
the
of
legi- even the legit ones are still kind of like, eh, there's human error.
Right.
You know, weather, human error, flying, like,
so
things happen.
Between that and a lack of, like, if I would have had real world statistics, if I would have just found statistics done in 2008 that said, yes, this is how many, percentage wise, this right. is how many ships went down in Bermuda Triangle, and this is how many went down between LA and China or went down wherever. And if I could see those numbers and all of a sudden I yeah. saw shit, the, like the Bermuda Triangle is 50% higher. Now we got yeah. something. But since
it's
no
not,
one has
though.
The stats
yeah.
and there's not that many mysterious things in the first place, I'm just kind of calling urban well, legend on
after
the whole
finding
thing.
The Nevada Triangle, it's kind of the same thing. Planes are going down.
Oh, really?
It's like a three a day thing or three a month. Three planes a month go down.
Shit.
So like there's like a bunch of weird factors there too. So
right.
Bermuda Triangle is really not that
right.
different from anywhere right. else. So
although it would be harder to get your boat lost in the Nevada Triangle.
No, if there's a boat there, like, yeah. We got problems.
If you like
Death Valley boats, they don't.
Our ship
there.
Ran aground.
We had to abandon ship.
We
were, just go make a boat out there. Like
we were 6 miles
desert.
From a Denny's. Yeah. Yeah. We barely made it on foot.
The only thing there were was brothels. We couldn't get anything to eat but pussy. So we starved to death.
Until we got to Burger King and ate chicken fries.
So you can survive for 40 days on pussy.
40 days?
40 yeah. days on pussy yeah. alone.
I did
yeah, you're getting hydrated.
That.
You could probably do more than that.
Only 4 days without water, but 40 days.
Yeah, 40 days as long as yeah. that, yeah. Because you're getting hydrated the whole time.
So that's
it's like eating
call.
A Joshua
not,
tree.
Not enough stuff going down to be, no. well, I think, I call it urban legend. That
so,
would be my...
so now, I mean, we as a group, we can't really acknowledge the Bermuda Triangle anymore. Like if somebody says the Bermuda Triangle, we just have to not acknowledge it.
Okay. Just don't even act like they didn't talk.
Yeah. Act like they didn't even say anything.
Yeah, because it's not, it's just like the Coast Guard. Like, it's not a thing.
What if you just act like all they said was Bermuda? Yeah, did you hear about all the creepy shit in Bermuda? Oh, I love Bermuda.
I'll just say yeah. it's pronounced it's Caribbean. Every time they say it to right. me, I'll be, it's pronounced Caribbean.
It's Caribbean.
I'll just say Bimini Bomini Boo as soon as they say it.
Dang it, can I switch answers?
Now you just sound like the soul of a black slave when you say that. That's all that is. So anyway.
That's all I got.
Electric fog.
Shout outs to our sponsors.
Okay. Dark Side Graphics, thank you for making our t-shirts. And we need to look at some other, we're going to open a web store pretty soon. We got our little shipping receiving area set up. If you guys have some type of product that you want to make a suggestion, I'm not saying we're going to get it for sure, but girls sexy booty shorts is on the list. But apparently there's 12,000 different kinds of booty shorts and we don't even know if there's anybody out there that would wear them. So we have some funny ideas.
Besides Terry McGee, we know Terry McGee would wear them.
Yeah, he
in a hot yeah. second would have that on.
And we don't want pictures
Facebook.
Of Terry McGee.
I'll tell you, it's coming. It's an inevitable
yeah,
thing. We can't
true.
Avoid it. So we should just roll with it. Let me know the size, Terry McGee. I think it's 5X.
No, we'll he wants small ones. He's gonna
so
take like mediums, like
yeah.
where they're just
yeah.
ball hanging out each side. Yeah, it's gonna be man moose knuckle and just.
So yeah. Dark Side Graphics.
Damn it! I have an image in my head already, and it's yes.
of Terry
disturbing.
McGee's moose knuckle.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Terry McGee's loving this right now. Golden, he says. So yeah, if you have any ideas for like, I don't know, it's summertime.
We're
so
doing shirts. We have coffee mugs, yeah. all that good stuff. Stickers you'll be able to get. Yeah. So what besides what we're gonna put on our models for the website. Suggest some things if you want. We'll see if we can get
yeah,
them.
Clothing type items that yeah. we might be able to put our logo on that you want. Yeah. Also, thanks to Digital Creations for making our swag, coffee mugs, travel mugs, Yucateco hot sauce, which have to say, I'm pretty happy with that sponsorship. Like, it's cool when you can get behind something that you actually like. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think people realize that I'm not just slinging hot sauce talk. Like, I love El Yucateco.
Yeah, and they're really cool.
They've been super cool to us. Yeah. And the thing is, like it's a daily thing in my life for sure. Like, I like hot sauce. I take joy in looking forward to whatever meal I'm eating because of the Yucateco hot sauce. And this is not just like some sales pitch.
I put it on my Fruity Pebbles this morning.
I mean, the whole reason that we have this sponsorship is, as soon as we were talking, we didn't even talk about it. We just, Brad and I were just told by Brent, hey, I've been shouting at El Yucateco, trying to get him to be a sponsor. And we're like, well, that makes sense, because you're a fucking fanatic.
Yeah.
You know? No, and it's got us on board. Like, yeah, all of us have El Yucateco in our cupboards.
I used to have other hot sauces, which shall forever go unnamed, that used to be some of my favorite hot sauces. And now my go-to hot sauce is El Yucateco.
Dispose of them properly is all I ask. And I got Sandrini. Locally has sauce over there now. They have the whole range of Yucateco. The sandwich shop down the street from us has the whole run of Yucateco. The coffee shop for their breakfast has the whole run of Yucateco. I took it to the pita truck, has the run of Yucateco. Yep. So I'm trying to spread the love. At least Bakersfield is Yucateco strong. So thank you to Yucateco for all the love. Salt 7 is also a new sponsor. Their phone number, if you're in Bakersfield or the surrounding area, apparently
it's totally worth driving in.
Yep. Yeah, it's rad. And I guess some people have been driving in a couple hours. Like, I mean, there's some places you can go. And if it's a matter of 10, 20, 30 minutes or something,
if you're desperate, if you're desperate, you can go somewhere else. But if you want a real experience, then you come over here and you talk to Dirk.
I can't say enough about how Dirk and Renee, they're awesome. It's a family owned thing. And the other thing is that he has the isotopic suspension. Their filtration system is
top notch.
I have an appointment tomorrow at 3:00.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's rad. So it's something to do for sure. And if you're debating on driving, it's worth the drive. My first time I did it, I drove all the way to Venice, which is a couple hours.
If you're from LA, get rid of the shitty ones and come up here and float in a good tank.
Stay at the Padre, drink some whiskey, float in the tank. You'll
have a good experience.
Now, if you're a fan of the middle of the day, hit us up on social networking. Maybe we're around.
And the Padre is supposedly haunted. There's like a little kid that runs around that thing. So weird stuff happens there. So you can have your paranormal experience and lay in some salt.
I think we talked about it on the haunting show.
We did. A little handprint. But Salt 7, you can contact them at 661-380-6280. Also at salt7.com. The web address is a little confusing. It's salt and then the number 7, EVEN. That cut out weird. Didn't it get cut out?
That was weird. What happened?
I don't know. There's an anomaly. We talk about ghosts and there goes the audio.
It's recording. That was
I'm still
weird.
Recording? Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's
salt. That was a little girl. She just touched me.
Apparently. That's right. Salt 7, S-A-L-T, the number 7, EVEN.com. Or you can call them at 661-380-6280.
Or you cannot be a fucking idiot and you can just Google Salt 7.
Maybe. Yep. I don't know what's going to happen if you Google Salt 7.
I don't know.
You'll go straight to Salt 7.
Is it?
But we want to thank all of our sponsors. And like I said, we're getting the store up and running, new website coming, thanks to our friends and family, the podcast family.
Someplace in Florida comes up if you Google Salt 7. Ooh, so try to follow my directions, I guess. They're also on Facebook, Instagram. We post stuff about them too. So it's on our Facebook.
Follow us on Instagram. I am Sofa King Brad. Sofa King David and Sofa King Brent are also on there. Follow us, see what we're doing in our daily lives. Dave posted an interesting picture of a chair with a giant stick on it. You can check that out.
Oh, also, if you want, we're going to try this out, but I can't make any promises if our phones explode. But on Sundays...
Don't do it to Dave, just us.
Yeah. Dave might kill you. But on Sunday, we record our podcast Sundays from 9 a.m. our time, Pacific Standard Time, until about 1 o'clock. So if you wanted to make a comment on our Instagram or direct messages or your Facebook Messenger on Facebook, if there's something, if you're funny enough or it's pertinent information about the topic that we're posting, if you post it between those times or message us between those times, we might be able to give you a shout out if it's not overwhelming or just completely silly.
Yeah, if it gets retarded, then it's not going to happen. But
we'll talk to you after the show.
Yeah, if you're funny or say something, we'll try and get it on there. So
trying to be able to let you guys get involved.
Get the fans involved. I know it's podcast, it's kind of not live, but something fun. So we'll try it out.
Seem kind of live, yeah.
And don't send it to me because I will
ignore you.
I just won't have my phone on. I'll be looking at notes and worrying about other things. My phone will be muted and I won't see my screen.
Yeah. So Dave says, fuck you. Me and Brent are like, send it to us. We're fine. Yeah. So thank you to our sponsors again. We really appreciate everything everybody's doing. All the fans, people listening. Our numbers are growing substantially and we appreciate it. So, pretty much it. Is that it?
That's it.
Don't be a retard. Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya, Bermuda.
the keys. There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all. Bodies in the sand, tropical drink melting in your hand. We'll be falling in love to the rhythm of a steel drum band down in Kokomo.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take it to Bermuda, Bahama. Come on, pretty mama, Key Largo, Montego Bay. Dreamy look in your eye, give me a tropical color.